thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
It's a living.
Here's John Williams.
Hi, it's John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. This is John Williams. I'm here weekdays from 1 to 3. This week, I'm starting at noon.
Lord have mercy.
Filling in on the Wintrust Business Lunch for Steve Bertrand. Steve will be back there and here next week. We'll go all the way till 3 today. Saturdays, 10 to noon. Bill Left just walked by the studio window, still wearing his ball cap, as he always does. It's kind of a signature piece for him. And I said to him and Wendy when we did a little crosstalk an hour ago that I don't believe I've ever seen the top of Bill's head. And now whenever I see Bill, I kind of chuckle because he could have a strawberry shortcake underneath there and I would be no less surprised than whatever else is under there because I have never seen the top of Bill Left's head. We've been to events before. He's wearing a ball cap. Now, they say when he goes to a fancy hoo-ha, he doesn't wear his ball cap, but I've never been to said hoo-ha with him. I've only seen Bill, and I've known Bill for 10, 12, forever, for a very long time. And we've worked at this. I see him like every day for years. Never seen the top of his head. I don't long for the top of his head, but it is kind of a mystery to me now.
I've seen it. It's not so mysterious. He was at my sister's wedding.
And he wasn't wearing a hat.
No.
I'm so glad to hear that because I actually thought Bill would wear it at a wedding. I mean, because that's his thing. That's what Bill does. He wears a ball cap. How's he look?
Great.
Is there a strawberry shortcake underneath there?
Yes. Good job. You knew it. How did you know? That's such an obscure guess.
I guess, and it's just a little bit on my mind this morning because Brenda and I were running around this morning and she said, "Do you want me to give you a ride?" And I said, yeah, I think I will take a ride today. I don't normally, we have one car. We usually leave it with Brenda. I normally take the L. But it was raining today, and they're doing construction on my stop. So I said, yeah, I'll take a ride. So I quickly gathered myself together. And as I had not had a time to properly put my head together, I just grabbed a Southern Illinois University Saluki ball cap and threw it on my head. And for a moment, I thought, that was easy. I'm Bill Leff. And then when I saw him today, well, the rest is history. They've announced the, in Chicago, Lollapalooza lineup for 2019. Elif was almost walking on air when she found out that who's going to be there?
The Strokes.
The Strokes.
The Strokes.
So I'm like, my estimated probability of accuracy on this, Elif, is 90%. But remember last week when we were talking about Lala? And I said I was there when Lady Gaga was there. And she wasn't as Lady Gaga-ish then as she is now, but she was a headliner. It was Lady Gaga, for crying out loud. And I had a decent view, but it wasn't working for me, and it was more visual, and it was going... I wasn't thoroughly entertained, and I thought, The Strokes, I'm pretty sure, was the other band on one of the other big stages.
I forgot to look that up, but I can.
So I walked away and heard a band that I thought was really awesome, and I thought it was The Strokes that year. The Strokes are returning this year as a headline act, along with, obviously, Ariana Grande. And, well, I'll give you the list here. The big names are Ariana Grande, Childish Gambino, That Will Be Fun, 21 Pilots, and The Strokes. Greg Kot says, are the headliners. I'm reading from his online piece at chicagotribune.com when the festival returns to Grant Park August 1st through the 4th. Tame Impala, Flume, The Chainsmokers, and J Balvin are also headlining. He says, it's a relatively fresh look this year at the top of the bill. Only The Strokes are returning as a headliner. So you'll go see The Strokes if you get in that day?
Oh, yeah.
Who else would you say I would go to Lollapalooza for?
Maybe Ariana Grande, if she's not playing the same night as him. If she is, then I'll go see The Strokes.
Yeah.
Janelle Monáe, Tame Impala, and...
Kacey Musgraves? Are you a Kacey Musgraves fan?
I've heard she's good, but I've never made an effort to listen to her.
181 bands and artists... 4-day passes are $340, Lollapalooza.com. 1-day tickets are $130. You can't get those. If you want to make sure you're in, you can buy a 4-day pass for $340 right now. So what have you got for us? What are you going to feature?
I'll be
yourself in Grant Park with 50,000 of your best friends all facing the same direction, jumping up and down to this. That'd be fun, wouldn't it?
Yes.
You know, we talk about Lollapalooza. It's not to make you feel old. It's to make you feel relevant again. So now you know what the Strokes sound like. Who else you want us to listen to? Who's this?
Tame Impala. That bass.
Little Tame Impala for you, if you haven't heard them before. I'm always intrigued, too. Again, this sounds old, but let's just be honest. If you don't know the band, that's okay. Why did they call themselves Tame Impala? I love the imagery. I don't know what that's all about, but I love the name of that band.
Makes you think of a car, right?
It makes me think of an Impala that has come into my backyard, and I'm petting it and feeding it a carrot or something. But it's cool because it's a Tame Impala.
So what's an Impala, then?
It's an animal. It's like a deer, elky thing.
Oh, then they're talking about that and not a car, probably.
Yeah, could be a four-cylinder, I don't know. So that's Tame Impala. Chainsmokers, the same thing. I almost looked them up just to see why they called themselves the Chainsmokers. Are some of them Chainsmokers and Chainsmokers? I don't know.
I don't know either.
But to me, like a Tame Impala, cool. I'd like a Tame Impala. Do you want to be a Chainsmoker? No.
No.
So that would have been a bad... If I had been at the band meeting, I would have gone, I don't know, let's think of animals. You know, because chain smokers is not positive imagery.
Well, neither is the Strokes, but it's got an intense feel to it, which
that's
I like.
True. Point. Who else you got for us? We getting funky on the scene and you know about it. Like a star on the screen, watch me tip all on it. Now maybe whether I'm high. What are we listening to here?
Janelle Monae.
Just a big Janelle Monae hit with somebody?
Yeah, I think so.
Here's Greg Cotta on that topic. He said Janelle Monae will undoubtedly make the case that she should be a headliner the next time she's booked to play the festival. But I'm another flavor, something like a Terminator. Ain't no equivocating. I fight for what I believe. Why you talking about? Now, give me one more to listen to, producer. Somebody else you like? Lollapalooza featuring somebody. Help me out here.
Childish Gambino, of course.
Oh, golly. Shame on me. Does he do This Is America when he's in concert? And I wonder how that works out when he does, right? I suppose so.
Why wouldn't he? I'm assuming he would.
Did you get some of Beach Money? Because they were here at WGN Radio. I'm just, again, referencing Greg Kot's piece online at the Tribune. He said among the Chicago artists, hip-hop soul stirrer Saba and rising co-ed rockers Beach Bunny will also be Lollapalooza. Maybe I should try harder. You should lower your expectations. I'm 87% sure Justin Kaufman had them in studio one time. Not that long ago. /119 on WGN, some of the music that you'll be able to see and hear at Lollapalooza. Tickets on sale, $340 at Lollapalooza.com. All right, thank you for Producer Ella for some of the details on that. By the way, David had the story, Mr. Jennings is in for Mr. Bertrand today, that R. Kelly said he should be able to go overseas in concert because if he does, he'll make a lot of money and then he'll be able to pay some of his bills. I don't think that's such a crazy idea. At first I went, oh no, you don't, fella. But unless he's a bona fide flight risk, like, you know, they say somewhere in France, and now here's R. Kelly. R. Kelly, where are you? Oh, no! He got away! So that's a possibility, I guess. But by and large, if one of the issues that we want to do is recover assets from him, let him go make some money. I won't buy a ticket, and I don't think that's an endorsement of him, or it's not saying we don't take seriously his crimes. But if he was an auto mechanic, you'd say, hey, listen, keep being an auto mechanic, go make some money, and then you'll be able to pay your child support, or maybe there'll be civil damages, or you'll need to afford an attorney, whatever. It's amazing how much money some of these people make and how much of it they still don't have. But if he wants to go overseas and sing some songs and then pay it to other people, I don't see the harm in that very last part. So what do you know? He's an artist. He's got to travel. By the way, you can subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. And you can now also follow the Mincing Rascals, our award-winning podcast on Spotify. Or you can keep listening online at WGNradio.com. But the new news for us here is that I just checked it out today to make sure. But if you've got Spotify, just type in the Mincing Rascals. And there we are, a couple years' worth of podcasts, including the most recent one we dropped last Thursday. We'll drop another one on you tomorrow afternoon. It's 1:21. Thomas Jefferson was the third president of the United States, and he's a personal friend of mine. He comes to Chicago a couple times a year, and we stand on stage. I talk to him for a little bit, and then we let you ask questions, too. The title of this year's show is something like, Hey, America, Jefferson's coming back, and boy, is he ticked. So we're going to talk a little bit about the state of affairs now and back then. It's always a wide-ranging show. And TJ will be on the phone with us after 1:30. I'd really like your questions and observations for him today as well. Oh, after 1:30. Elif said, no, don't forget, it's a 2. So 2:10, TJ, you and me today. One of the things that we'll kick around, I'll just ask him, is does he think, as Elizabeth Warren does, we should eliminate the Electoral College, have a national popular vote? Some Democrats also think we ought to add to the Supreme Court. We ought to keep adding them until they get a majority. If it takes 57, there's some Democrats who think we need that many Supreme Court justices to tip the tone of the Supreme Court again. We'll ask him about that. And anything else you want to, that's after 2 here on WGN. Speaking of Lollapalooza music, with the Chicago connection, Judah and the Lion. Wheaton's Brian McDonald and Company will be at Lollapalooza. Brett Jackson, one of our engineers here, is a buddy of Brian's. I guess they grew up near each other. And he said, hey, did you know that Judah and the Lion are going to be there? And I said two things. A, no, I didn't know Judah and Lion are going to be there. And B, what's a Judah and the Lion? He said, it's a really good band. And we concur. Thanks for the heads up on that, Brett. Judah and the Lion also coming home to Lollapalooza. Congrats to them. Michelle, you're on WGN. This is John. What's up, Michelle?
Hi, John. If I could, just want to make 2 points about this R. Kelly nonsense. Number one, and I live in a rural community, a rural county, but there are people that get jailed for noncompliance in paying their child support.
Oh, really?
And they get indefinite sentences. Indefinite. That means they are sitting in jail until a judge decides to let them out.
Hmm.
Okay, good, bad, or indifferent, this does happen in the real world. When a judge gets kind of sick and tired of somebody promising to do something and they don't do it again and again and again, they are finally held in direct civil contempt and jail. Now, Mr. Kelly, I think, and this is, could be judgmental on my part, could maybe move out of Trump Tower, ask each of his girlfriends to get a job, and maybe that would help his financial situation.
You know, it's so funny you mentioned that. I think that's well put, and I very much appreciate the reality check on that. Literally, when R. Kelly got out of jail, and Roe talked about the tricked-out van that he got into, which I thought was apropos. If it's financial problems, it's also getting him jailed at times. If you're $167,000 in arrears on your child support, right? So one of the things that went through my mind is the next day I see him on TV and he has on a beautiful suit, which I thought maybe he owned already. He didn't just run out and buy that, I'll betcha. But it sure does look like it just came back from CD1 Price Cleaners. I thought, how does he have money to pay a dry cleaner? Because he's $167,000 down. How does he pay rent unless he owns it outright, his place at Trump Tower? Those are expensive things, even dry cleaning. I literally thought, wow, that looks like a lot of money there. Oh, wait, you don't have a lot of money there. He should be like in a shirt that is cotton that he probably ironed himself, and he should have on khakis. This would be punishment enough for R. Kelly. Khakis? He should look like somebody who's not rich. Lots of text today, both about Lollapalooza and R. Kelly. And for that matter, something we'll talk with Thomas Jefferson about after 2 o'clock, the Electoral College. Should we just say whoever gets the most votes wins, Mr. Jefferson? What do you say about that? I really want your input on the next two segments. We'll visit with Phil Vitale, restaurant critic from the Chicago Tribune, in a few minutes. And we're going to ask you to tell us what is the one dish. It could be a French fry. It could be a fancy foo-foo thing. Tell me the dish that you really like, right? Not the restaurant, but boy, I would go anywhere for the thing at the thing. That's in the next half hour. Phil will referee that. This is John Williams in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Just about the last segment we did. This texter from 708 says, nobody who listens to WGN cares about Lollapalooza, or Lollapalooza for that matter. And that not only is that not true, listen, I know it's a foreign language to a lot of you, and I think that's why we do it. It's a major cultural event in the city that you live in or near, and while you don't go, maybe your kids or grandkids do, or isn't it nice to know something that's happening in your community? I don't go to Chicago Bears games, but I like to know what's happening over at Soldier Field. That's a bad comparison because the Bears are of interest to everybody. But I'll bet you and I could think of things that aren't necessarily in our wheelhouse, but you want to know a little bit about. And that's why we like to focus a little bit on Lollapalooza and hear what the new music is these days. This one from 847 says, hey, Elif, that's my producer. How do you find these new artists? I have always wanted to know, says Brian. P.S. I'm 49. Well, in this case, it's the Lollapalooza lineup. But do you click around on some sites that you especially like when you're surfing music, or is it just radio and whatever?
It's a mix. I actively seek new music, so I use Spotify Discover. That's a new thing I use.
Oh, really? That's a channel on Spotify?
Yeah, it's one of the radio stations called Discover Weekly,
yeah.
And it creates a playlist for you every week.
Really? Based on what you'd previously, does it know what
algorithm.
Your wheelhouse is? Yeah.
And then it started when I was maybe 13 or 14, and I would just look for new music using illegal services.
We're using, was it Napster or, no, what was the one, LimeWire?
I think it was LimeWire or Kazaa or something.
Kazaa.
That's God, so do weird.
Do you remember when Phil Vitale just walked into our studio, restaurant critic, Chicago Tribune, if we were going to do a Phil Vitale music station, what would it sound like?
Oh, it would probably sound a lot like WXRT, more, stuff that was really, really hot for me in the 70s.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff I still listen
to. But that's
to.
What XRT sounds like now, too. Mm-hmm. So sure. You kind of like classic rock.
Yeah, I'm locked in. Yeah, exactly.
So who's your classic rock artist?
Say Springsteen.
Yeah.
I'd be locked into Springsteen. I go back into Grateful Dead, some of the stuff back then, and I listen to a lot of that. I mean, but you know, I listen to early Pearl Jam and Foo Fighters, and probably stuff whose names are artists whose names escape me at the moment.
Listening.
But nobody who's on the Lollapalooza lineup, as far as I know.
Which is okay, too.
Which is fine.
I mean, we had our Lollapaloozas back in the day. Mm-hmm. Now this is theirs. And someday they're going to be older and their kids are going to go, what's a Tame Impala? Oh, that's so stupid. So let's not be that.
And I've been to Lollapalooza several times, but I was reviewing the food. That's why I was there.
Are you going to do that again this year?
I have passed that baton to people with...
You don't want to do that? The food's not so terrible.
No,
there.
It's not. It's not. But, you know, we have people on our staff who are, unlike your reader, not 49.
Yeah.
And they'll have a much more fun time. And honestly, when I went there, I did the food. I would be back out of there by 6 o'clock, kind of wasting because you file your story and it's done.
You didn't stay for the music, in other words.
I usually did not. Usually I was kind of. Like, I wanted to go lie down because I'd be...
Well,
I had been eating for
whenever you're doing
3.5 hours.
Festival food reviewing, it does sound kind of punishing.
Yeah.
A Taste of Chicago, for instance.
Exactly. Exactly. Because the idea is you're trying to experience, which is a nice way of saying cram in, as much food as you can in a short while so that you can get your reporting out there while it still matters.
I want to just read a couple of texts. Hola for Lola. By the way, I'm 59, 847, I'm 57, female, and I go to current artist concerts. I'm interested in Lala information, 708. Lollapalooza is a community event. It is community news, and the list goes on.
Can I just make a quick correction?
What?
That was Hala for Lala.
Hala for Lala.
Hala.
What did I say, Hola for Lola?
Yeah.
I thought you said Lola Falana. I was way off.
And about the R. Kelly conversation, not that we had much of one. I just mentioned David Jennings' story in the news that R. Kelly is evidently going to or wants to travel to Dubai to do a concert. He said, you got to let me do what I do. That's how I'll pay my bills. 847 says R. Kelly is booked for Dubai and scheduled to meet the ruler. It is one of the best places for criminals to disappear. There is no extradition treaty with the U.S. 312 says, hi, John. I do think there is a problem to let R. Kelly perform there. I don't know my auto mechanic's personal life. He's not a public figure. But if I knew that he had been charged with what R. Kelly has been, I would not hire that scumbag. Kelly probably has some legal right to perform stateside. But the idea of his words being out there, his songs about love and relationships and spirituality, makes me sick. What are you writing about this week? You're not. You don't have a new fresh review for us, do you?
No. I was still coming down from my long week in Singapore. So, but while I was working on my tan, my colleagues at the Tribune were working on a month long roundup of Korean food, which we are now halfway through, and. Yeah, every day highlighting a different dish at a different restaurant.
That's up on Argyle? Is that the neighborhood generally we're speaking
no,
about north?
At one point, the biggest concentration would have been along Lawrence Avenue,
yeah.
west of Argyle. But it's kind of Korean food is having a moment. I mean, a lot of the ingredients are showing up in other dishes. You've got Bill Kim's restaurants that until you know were all on the near west side and a little bit northwest. And yeah, you're seeing more and more of it. You're running into dishes like that. I was just at an Italian wine bar and they had a broccoli dish that definitely had Korean influence in the way they mixed the black garlic and chilies and all that.
I'm okay with that. I mean, I don't eat Korean food much, but when I have, I always thought, ooh, that's good.
You're right. It's usually on the light side. It, there's a lot of vegetables in there, a lot of noodles that are not wheat-based noodles, but more like sweet potato starch noodles, a fair amount of seafood. So it's not terribly heavy food. It's lively food. For sure, but it's...
What's this one dish thing?
Well, we call it our month, whatever we're craving this month. And one month it was ice cream. So every day online we highlighted one particular ice cream dish or one particular ice cream store. And we did a month of pie. We did a month of burgers. We've done pizza. We've done Italian. We've done all kinds of stuff. And this month we happen to be looking at Korean food.
But then you don't say this is, everybody tell me what your favorite Korean restaurant is, but mm-mm. What's a single dish in a particular restaurant?
Exactly.
And it might not even be the best restaurant, but doggone it, they're good at that, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You say, here's a good dish and here's where to find it.
Well, let's just try this. I need your help now. 312-981-7200. It could be Korean, but it doesn't have to. In fact, let's not limit it. Just tell me when somebody says, what's something you really love to eat out in the city? What is it? It could be a milkshake, a hot dog, a french fry. It could be a Korean dish at one of these trendy restaurants. It could be something at one of the four-star restaurants
sure.
in the city. But what's the thing that you really love?
And where exactly do you want to get it the best?
Oh, well, I would suppose, but I'm thinking it's, okay, well.
The chicken Vesuvio at blank.
Oh, absolutely right. So if you say Chicago dog, that doesn't get it done. I need to know where the Chicago dog
right.
is.
Right, we need details.
And it might be the french fries at a Chicago hot dog stand, and mm-hmm. you don't love the Chicago dog there any more than anywhere else, but the fry, we want the dish, the specific item.
I always go to blank for the blank. We'll play match game.
Okay, that's it. I always go to blank for the blank. Or I would love to go to blank for the blank.
Well, you got to try the blank at blank. A lot of blanks.
312-981-7200. Now, don't let us draw a blank here. Just call right now or text. Restaurant critic of the Chicago Tribune. Each month they pick something. This month it's Korean food, and they're doing their, what do you call it? One dish?
Yeah, our craves, what we're craving. And every day a different dish at a particular restaurant.
Okay, so let's just see what's the thing that, what do we do, the blank for the, you go to the blank for the blank?
Yeah, I always go to blank for blank. You've got to try the blank at blank. One of those things.
Kevin, you're on WGN.
Fill in the blanks.
Kevin, hey, John, how you doing?
Hi, talk to us, man.
One of my favorite places that I crave is when you go to Italy, if you take the escalator to the second floor, they've got a small, like almost a kiosk with rotisserie meats, and they do a rotisserie prime rib with a porcini black pepper dry rub on it. They roast it, and then they carve it nice and thin, and then they put it on a fresh Italian roll, and then just a little drizzle of a nice olive oil and sea salt. It is amazing. It is the most delicious sandwich you'll ever have. It's so clean and simple.
That's the Italy downtown then, Chicago, right?
Yes, yes.
I could not agree
fantastic.
More.
Fantastic.
That sandwich is life-changing.
Because you're right, not too far there from Lowry's, and in their little pub mm-hmm. that they have on the side, they make a great roast beef sandwich there, but you sold that, man. That sounds really good, Kevin.
Worth a visit.
Thank you for the call.
Okay, bye-bye.
You've had that, huh?
I have. It's every bit as good as he says. That's a great pick.
I was worried it would be too pedestrian for you.
No. You can
give
me.
That you're a
you
fancy
had me
pants
at prime rib. No problem at all.
Antoinette, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Talk to us. Hey.
Hi.
I just was going to say the meatballs at Panino's in Park Ridge, they make great bread and pizza, too. But then Kevin talked so much, I had to throw in my chicken Vesuvio at Francesco's Hole in the Wall, too.
Nice.
Oh, that's
it is such a great description. And I'm a chicken Vesuvio fanatic. And
that's up in Northbrook, correct?
Northbrook, yes. Oh, my God, it's so great.
Francesca's
Hole in
yes.
the Wall.
Hole
I thought
in
she was
wall.
Just adding on. That's the name of the place?
Francesco's Hole
yes.
in the Wall, right. It predates
John,
the Francesca chain.
That's the one I'm thinking
right,
of.
Right, right, right. No, this is a different.
No.
It is. It. I think you would agree, wouldn't you, that that's an apt description of the interior?
Yeah, it's a tiny little cottage, and whatever they're serving is on the blackboard, and when they run out, that's it.
Yep.
Chicken Vesuvio.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God! And the Aunt Louise's special Sunday sauce is fabulous too.
Antoinette, great! Thanks for the call.
Ciao.
Just what we were hoping for. Grace, you're on WGN. Talk to us. You're on the air.
Hi there. I've got a problem. I can't find where my favorite dish is. Veal Oscar. Then the place where they always substitute something, and then it just isn't the same. Oh. Maybe Phil can help me out to find a good place to get it.
Ooh, who's got good veal Oscar these days? I had a place in mind, but they just closed at the end of the last year.
In Lincoln Square?
Yeah, it was a great.
I would check.
It's one of those things you're going to call around because it's a dish from yesteryear. You know, your veal and your crab meat and cheese, you know, a big sauce. I would give Petterino's in the Loop a call and mm-hmm. see if they could do something like that.
Maybe you know one. 312-981-7200. You just had a delicious veal Oscar. Was that what she's asking
veal
for?
Veal Oscar. Yeah.
All right. Stay tuned, Grace. Maybe I'll get you another recommendation from one of our listeners too. I can't believe I'm spacing the name of the place you and I are trying to think of. Tony, you're on WGN. Jump in here, Tony. You go the where for the what?
I go to the Art of Pizza for their Chicago deep dish spinach and onion or sausage pizza. I've been going there for 25 years. I used to live a half block from it, eat there four nights a week. Now I still go down there. I don't live anywhere there. I still go down there once a week. And, John, it's not too far from you. It's 3033 North Ashland.
I go by there all the time, and we keep meaning to go in there. It's kind of an intriguing front. And I go, Brenda, we got to try that. It says it's the best pizza in Chicago.
It's certainly one of the tastiest doughs you'll ever have.
Really?
It's a really, really seriously put together pizza dough.
Yeah.
Sabatino is what we were banging our heads about.
Thanks for the phone call. Thanks for the heads up on that, Tony.
Well, thank you. Bye-bye.
Art of Pizza on Ashland, he said. 3000 block. Larry, Fox Lake, you're on WGN. Larry, what do you want to say?
Simples in Lake Geneva, they have the best corned beef hash.
And what's the name of that place?
It's called Simples.
S-I-M-P-L-E-S, like Simples. Simples.
Yeah, yeah. If you ever get up there, get the corned beef hash.
Corned beef hash. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate the call. That does sound good sometimes. I've got a hankering for some corned beef hash now.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of. If you didn't get any for
St. Patrick's Day,
and Schmaltz Deli in Naperville does some remarkably good corned beef hash, which they smoke, which is a little different.
Eric, you're on WGN. Jump in there. Hi.
Hi. I'm trying to find a restaurant that serves veal cannelloni. Even if you go to any of the outfit suburbs in the western yeah. part of the city, you can't find a restaurant that serves good veal cannelloni.
That's well put. I'm sorry.
You know, outfit suburbs.
What's the point of being a good suburban mob boss if you don't have a restaurant you set up to get people some good veal cannellonis?
Yeah, exactly.
That
sounds like a kind of dish you could request of your favorite Italian restaurant.
Nothing in Cicero, nothing in...
Melrose Park, River Grove, you know, around there.
It's an expensive dish to make relative to other cannellonis or any other kind of filled pasta you might put together. That might account for why it's rare because of what they have to charge sell it.
Let's do this. We'll rendezvous back here next week. We'll do a version of this again next week. And if we can answer the veal questions and the other dish
veal Oscar. It's all about veal. It'll be all veal next week.
Let's have some. That's your assignment.
All right. Cannelloni and Oscar. Veal Oscar. The trick about veal Oscar is it's kind of Italian, but kind of not.
All right. Dolores says she knows where to get a decent veal Oscar. Hey, Dolores.
Yes, John.
You're on the air. Talk to us.
Oh, okay. The best veal Oscar I've ever had is at the Palm Court restaurant in Arlington Heights.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. You've got the real crab on top. No imitation. Nice, crisp, little asparagus on top, and the veal is tender.
How about that? Thanks for the heads up on that. And that location in Arlington Heights was what again? The Palm?
Palm Court, Arlington Heights Road, and Palatine Road.
Wonderful. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the help.
I'm looking. Apparently it's on the menu still.
Phil Vitale is the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune. Read them in print, read them online, chicagotribune.com/dining.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
I'm hungry.
Here's John Williams.
Phil Vitale in the studio. Everybody talking about their favorite bites in the city. Now I've got three pages of text on them. I'm starving. This is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio till 3, Saturdays 10 to noon on social media. Like and follow WGN King John. That's me. Just one quick note about those. This one here says, John, I live in DeKalb. I would walk to Bevette's in Chicago just to have the thick-cut bacon and Brussels sprouts any weather. I've had the thick-cut bacon there. It is fantastic. Not so much the Brussels sprouts, but that's because I don't like Brussels sprouts. By the way, speaking of White Sox baseball, Kevin, what's that concerned look on your face? Talk
to
me, man.
Thank you, John. No concern look. Looks like some good news, actually, for the White Sox. This, according to The Athletic, Eloy Jimenez, who's their top prospect, it appeared he wouldn't be up on the big league club until late April. And according to multiple reports, the White Sox have agreed on a new contract with Eloy Jimenez. 6 years, $43 million with two club options. Basically, this gives him a full-blown major league contract and takes him off a rookie contract, meaning service time doesn't matter anymore. Meaning Eloy Jimenez likely will be on the opening day roster.
No reason to Chris Bryant him, in other words.
Exactly. That basically what they do is they go to arbitration for multiple years. After 3 years, you go to arbitration, and then you know, there's service time manipulation, and that's probably what the White Sox were going to do and probably what they should have done and not brought him up until late April. But with this contract, John, and the Sox haven't even confirmed it yet, but if this is legit, then you're likely going to see Eloy Jimenez on your starting opening day roster.
Well, we want to sell some tickets, and since we're kind of in a mood right now that we're going to wait this year for next year, I'm happy to see that news.
No question. I mean, if you have that big league contract, there's really no reason whatsoever not to have him on your big league roster.
And Cease is not going to start with the big club, is he? Isn't he going to start?
No, you'll probably see him a little bit later on in the year.
Yeah,
everything
right.
goes according to plan.
I wonder if he's going to look at 43 2 years into a really good career and go, dang.
Look, we've seen people have been calling collusion in Major League Baseball, but we've seen
here's proof that it's not.
there's that. A guy's never swung a bat in the big leagues, and the White Sox are willing to commit this amount of years and money towards a player. And look, four players this offseason were guaranteed over $1 billion in Arenado, Machado, Harper, and Trout. So a bit. These teams are spending money, and the White Sox did something that I think will put a smile on Sox fans' place.
A president of the United States is on hold, so I don't have time
for this. I apologize, John. Yes, go ahead. Just wanted to get that in there for you.
But $430 million. Wait till Thomas Jefferson finds out that the Anaheim Angels are going to give a guy $430 million to play baseball. I guess that's the world I live in. I don't know that I want that. It's 2:11 on WGN. Thank you, Kevin Powell. Jump in with any other breaking news.
You got it.
As long as things aren't breaking. You told me off the air, you go, I got some news about Eloy, and I'm like, oh, crap, now what?
Right.
This is the
good thought it was
kind.
Bad, right?
This
is good.
Good
this is good news, yes.
President, oh, by the way, opening day weather. Baseball starts, is it?
Does a week from tomorrow.
A week from tomorrow is
and officially
opening
it started because the Mariners and Athletics have been playing this Japanese series, but
okay, so baseball starts tomorrow and then Thursday, and then the home opener for the White Sox is the following Thursday?
No, the White Sox actual season opener is a week from
okay, so it's next
this,
Thursday. So
correct.
2 weeks from Thursday is the home opener.
But they're doing sort of this weird, like, 2 week or 2 week before the actual season, but the games do matter in the Athletics and Mariners. They played at 5 a.m. this
still hard to believe
time.
That in 2 weeks so. We're going to be sitting at
35th and Shields.
Producer Olive, what is the average weather for, what is that,
April 4th?
Yeah. What's the average weather for April 4th in Chicago, please?
April 4th, high 53, overnight low 43, overcast with 3/10 inch of rain forecast.
50s is fine.
53. Okay, fine.
That's good to me.
No, it's not snowing.
Yeah,
it's not snowing.
It's dry.
President Thomas Jefferson joins us now on WGN Radio. Sorry to make you wait, President Jefferson, but that was breaking White Sox baseball news. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, my dear citizen, but I'm fascinated that you have a machine that tells you the weather and can look back on weather patterns over a number of months or years. I worked hard all my life to create the conditions under which we could record weather data and maybe compile it and compare it, and at some point perhaps even predict the weather. So you have a machine, something, a robot, a device that tells you, that speaks to you about weather?
And some of that information is predicated on things people like you kept. Your fastidious records of the weather help us know about the weather today. So thanks to you. Props for that, Mr. Jefferson.
We were very low tech, to use a term from your time, but we were doing these things. We were engaged in the classification of knowledge and library classification and the periodic table. And this was the age of the encyclopedia and the age of Linnaeus, in which he gave plants and later animals binomial Latin names, and we were classifying the clouds and so on and so forth. We were trying to begin systematic measurement of everything so that by your time you would be able to draw conclusions from all of that very basic and sometimes tedious work that we were doing. When I sent Lewis and Clark up the Missouri River, they took the weather every day, twice a day, at my request, once at dawn, and then again about 4 p.m., and this included cloud cover and precipitation and temperature using the Fahrenheit scale, et cetera. And so this was an early attempt to build the database from which I hope you are now benefiting.
Think about it, though. So there's a president of the United States, maybe a secretary of state, but a high-ranking U.S. government official. The president of the United States keeping weather records and gardening and involved in architecture and all of the disciplines that you mastered and employed. Today, we don't in any way, I don't think, expect our, you know, Barack Obama wasn't key. The only thing we would ask our presidents today would be to do good NCAA college basketball picks. If they had special skills they brought to the White House, real estate or diplomacy, that's a bonus. But I think today we pick presidents more for their personality and their charisma. And the idea that a president would be taking five weather measurements a day would seem odd. I'll just put it that way.
I was a scientist and a man of letters and a great exemplar of the Enlightenment, of curiosity, much more than I was a political figure. I regarded myself as a farmer first and a scientist second, and I was a reluctant politician. So I think we had a different attitude towards the Republic fundamentally back then. But I can tell you this, I took enormous delight in taking down weather data and measuring things and making grids and charts.
Yeah.
Nothing made me happier than to chart something. And this brought order to my life, and I hoped it would have an influence on the larger culture. But, you know, a president or any political figure is under enormous stress much of the time because no easy decisions ever reach the desk of someone at that level. And so you have to work off that stress. And for me, measuring things, counting, taking my thermometer out on the White House grounds, that gave me a sense of calm, but also it made me think that I was actually contributing something to the future of human happiness.
You are going to be appearing with us in Downers Grove on May 18th, May 18th at the Tivoli Theater. Or do you say Tivoli? Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove, May 18th. So you and I will, as we have in the past, walk onto stage. I'll visit with you for 30, 40 minutes. Then we'll take questions from our listeners. We can do that now. That is from the people in the studio audience. They'll literally get a chance to ask one of the founding fathers, what do they think about current events? Or maybe you've got a question about things that happened a couple of hundred years ago. Jefferson on stage at the... Now I've got a mental block about how to say the name of the theater.
Well, Tivoli. So Tivoli was the home of Hadrian. So Hadrian, the Roman emperor, wanted to get away from the press and the disease and vulgarity of Rome. So he built himself a kind of model Mediterranean villa about 20 miles from Rome, and called it Tivoli, and the ruins of it were being uncovered in my time. It was a magnificent, it was kind of a like a Disney sort of world, to use a term from your era, and Tivoli was this place where the Roman Empire was seated for the time of one of the greatest and most learned of all the emperors, Hadrian. So it will give me pleasure to talk with you about, we could translate some classical texts together on that stage.
Yeah, let's not. So that's, you would know all of that, by the way. I didn't know you knew that. So that's in Downers Grove. The show is at 10 a.m. at the Tivoli Theater, May 18th. The most important thing is that you know May 18th at that theater in Downers Grove, 10 a.m. You cannot get tickets yet. I'll tell you later this week when you can, but I just wanted to sort of remind folks that the show is coming up and circle it on their calendar. One other thing about the upcoming show, Mr. Jefferson, we didn't know exactly what to call it, but the working title for the show this spring is going to be something like, Hey America, Jefferson's coming and he's ticked. I don't know if that is a fair assessment, but I was worried that you'd look around and see $430 million going to a baseball player and a president who you might take issue with, or a Congress that you might take issue with, and I would think you would look sternly at us these days.
I don't think I was really ever very angry in the whole course of my life, and I don't think I ever used the word ticked, but I understand the principle. I would be disappointed. I would be disappointed that you have strayed so much from an agrarian republic. I would be disappointed that that you have allowed yourself to slip into this constitutional crisis that you're in and deepening. I would be dismayed that you don't educate the people so that they can be on top of their own destiny and govern themselves in a more profound way. I would certainly be upset by your national debt and your international footprint of bases and armies and navies all over the world. But you know, sir, you know this well. I believe that the earth belongs to the living, not the dead, that the living get to build whatever world they think best for themselves. And even though I might not approve of it or admire it, it's your world, not mine. I lived between 1743 and 1826, and I could no more anticipate the future than perhaps you can.
All right, so here's the texts and the phone calls. I'll ask them as quickly as I can. From our text line, you can call in too. And Mr. Jefferson, be as brief with your answers as you can. Are you ready?
Yes.
John, please ask Thomas Jefferson if eliminating the Electoral College would allow New York, Florida, and California to choose the president for Iowa, North Dakota, and Vermont. What's your reaction to that?
I'm for getting rid of the Electoral College because it was put in there by the Founding Fathers, of whom I was not one, to stand between the people and their choice for president. And as you know, I was the victim of the Electoral College in the election of 1800, so I would eliminate it.
So if it was a popular national vote, which Elizabeth Warren wants, just counted all the votes in all the states in principal territories that get to vote, just take those votes, count them up, whoever gets the most votes wins. That's how you think we should do it?
Well, I don't know that I should dictate this to you, but I will say this. In your last election, I'm told that one candidate received about 3 million more votes than the one who won, and that's sort of within the range of what you might consider to be acceptable. What if one candidate outdistanced the rival by 25 million votes and still lost in the Electoral College? In other words, at some point, the Electoral College becomes an institution of shame to a people that governs themselves. 3 million votes may be under that radar, but at some point, if that distortion gets too large, this will create a huge legitimacy crisis for the Constitution and for the person who's the putative winner. So why not move towards a situation in which it's closer to actual democracy, in which the people's voice is determinative and not filtered through a kind of Vatican-style college of cardinals called the Electoral College?
We could talk more about this on stage, because I know the problem with what you just said is, though, that delegitimizes North Dakota and Iowa and Vermont, that those people feel like they'll never get a say. It'll always be Democrats from big city states, and that's just the way it's going to be now.
Well, I'm from Virginia, which was the biggest and most populous state in my time, and we thought that was about right. We did not want to have to share two votes in the Senate Rhode Island or Delaware.
Yeah. All right, so maybe that makes sense for the Senate to find some way to appropriate representation from smaller populated areas, but should we keep that in mind when we're counting for the presidency? We currently do, and you don't think we should. Here's another question for you. Should the government regulate social media? Wouldn't regulating them hurt free speech?
Yes, I'm essentially an absolutist with respect to the First Amendment, that we have an essentially unlimited right to freedom of expression. And, of course, that freedom only matters when it protects dangerous speech or obnoxious speech or even seditious speech. We don't need a First Amendment to protect polite speech. We need a First Amendment to protect speech that the people in power might find objectionable. And so I think we must be exceedingly careful never to erode the nearly absolute provision of the First Amendment.
King John, please ask, that's what they call me sometimes, please don't take offense.
Sorry to hear that.
King John, please ask Mr. President, how long was his campaign for the presidency and what did it cost?
It cost nothing. I never left Monticello. It lasted for, I suppose, two or three months in 1800, but I never gave a speech. I never left the environs of Monticello. I never made a campaign stop. I never issued a statement or what you'd call a news release or media. I never asked for a vote. I never raised a campaign contribution. So I would say for me, zero, but my agents, my friends, as we called them in the 18th century, would have been writing letters for a few months before the election.
Part two of this texter says, well, then what does he think about people campaigning for over 2 years and spending millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars, if they're the party nominee for president?
I can say this. I once went to Milan in northern Italy and saw the great Duomo, the cathedral there, and I said, this is one of the greatest examples I've ever seen of the utter waste of human money and resources. If you'd taken all the money that built that cathedral, you could have paved a bridge from the Mediterranean over to the Near East. Think of what you could do with this sort of money if you put it to the amelioration of the condition of mankind, to roads, to universities, to libraries, to art galleries, to statuary,
right,
to poetry, to dance, to music,
we got
to the education of our children.
Yeah. Question for President Jefferson. When Aaron Burr killed Alexander Hamilton, did Burr's fellow party members support and defend Burr, or did they denounce him? I think there's a subtext to this question, but what do you say about that?
He was indicted in New York and in New Jersey. He fled. He was slightly rehabilitated for a short time, but killing the great little Hamilton was a career-ending move for Aaron Burr. He eventually left the country and spent a number of years living abroad. No, we did not rehabilitate him, and I dropped him from my ticket, as you would call it, for my second term in 1804.
I think the subtext here is, though, sometimes politicians these days say terrible things, say about John McCain, and it seems like the party members are loath to denounce the party head. I don't know if you have any further comment on that, but I think that's what that may be driving at.
Well, this always happens in my own case, although I never would have admitted this in my lifetime. The Sally Hemings story broke in 1802. I was serving my first term. Those who hated me made much of it, and it was in sermons and debated in legislative sessions in New England, and people found this to be absolutely appalling. And people who were my supporters said, this is a private matter. We don't even know if it's true. We should be careful not to let people's private lives be ruined by rumor and public innuendo. So I think it's fair to say that this sort of politics is eternal, but you must draw the line at the rule of law. John Adams said it best, and no man is ever above the law. Your behavior might be objectionable, but if you break the law, then the country has no choice but to remove you.
Mr. Jefferson, as a founding father, you and your friends put checks and balances into the Constitution as a form of government as possible and as many as possible, and yet this year it seems the president seems to be doing everything he can to become king. What did you guys miss here? The president's way too powerful.
Well, I always felt that the impeachment clause in the Constitution was not very apt. You know, if you set the bar at high crimes and misdemeanors, then it's going to be quite difficult to get rid of a president who shows malfeasance in office, who's incompetent, who perhaps is senile, or somebody whose behavior is so out of character with the idea that we have of public virtue that we just can't stand to have such a person leading the country, and particularly as commander-in-chief. So I was for expanding the idea of impeachment. I spoke of a few cheerful impeachments with respect to the Supreme Court,
yeah,
because we need that tool at times, and we can't wait until there is a crime that a majority in the House and a supermajority in the Senate are willing to prosecute.
Two quick questions here, one from a listener, one from a texter. That is a caller and a texter. Mr. President, were you aware of the great artists of your time, like Mozart and Beethoven?
I knew Mozart's work. I saw some of it during my time in France, some of his operas, including his comic operas, and I appreciated his music. Music is the favorite passion of my soul. I was aware of Beethoven, sort of, but I can tell you this, as a rationalist, as a lover of Bach, I found it too wild and romantic.
Well, then I won't get you tickets to Lollapalooza, because we were talking about the lineup in August, and that thing's going to rock, boy.
Anything that ends with Palooza, I'm not going to attend.
Last call, Dennis, you're on WGN. What was your question or comment for President Jefferson?
Yes, I wanted to know what the difference is between the verbiage, between the way the Second Amendment was written originally and how it finally got approved, and how did Patrick Henry get involved in that?
I need a short answer, Mr. Jefferson.
I will make it short. We should talk about this when I come to Tivoli. Patrick Henry was not involved in it. The Second Amendment was written by James Madison. It did not get much debate. It probably should have been debated longer than it was, but the first Congress saw this sort of as just boilerplate and public relations. But I take it very seriously. I believe a free man is a man with a gun.
The texter said, what does he mean by a well-regulated militia? Again, you didn't write that, but that's something we'll have to take up because...
Mr. Madison could answer that question, but the basic sense of it is that we don't want a professional standing army. We don't want a permanent army, a permanent navy, in your time a permanent air force, a permanent coast guard, etc. We want a people's militia, and in that case they have to be able to supply their own weapons or they're not a militia.
I wonder if I should tell him about the Space Force. All right, Mr. Jefferson, so at the Tivoli Theater... In where are we going to be, Aleph? Where's the Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove on the 18th of which month, producer Aleph? May at 10 a.m. Tickets are not on sale yet, but at the Tivoli, Downers Grove, 10 a.m. May 18th. May 18th. Make sure you reserve some time. Tomorrow I will tell you how and when you can get tickets. As always, Mr. Jefferson, quite a pleasure to talk to you, sir. I'm looking forward to our springtime visit.
I'm going to bring two copies of Homer's Odyssey in Greek and two thermometers and a theodolite. We'll have a great day.
That's Thomas Jefferson. He's your third president. Details on tickets tomorrow. Please circle May 18th. I don't even know what that last thing was he said. This is John Williams at 2:39, live from the Allstate Skyline Studio. The Mincing Rascals is the podcast we record here on Thursdays. We'll drop another one on you tomorrow afternoon. It's the award-winning podcast, Judge the Best in the City. Some friends of ours from WGN Radio, that would be Patty Vasquez, Justin Kaufman, Steve Bertrand, and then over at the Chicago Tribune, Eric Zorn and Scott Stantis, their editorial cartoonist. Join us, IMC, and we kick things around. Best in the City, said the Headliner Club, and now available on Spotify. Just type in The Mincing Rascals. There are The Mincing Rascals on Spotify. Just a quick note about Thomas Jefferson. Lots of texts still coming in about this. You should come to the show. If you liked what you heard, come to the show. If you don't like what you heard, come to the show. John, really? Even more slave-owning white guys version of history? Please, said a texter. Listen, you want to bring that up? He'll talk about it. And it's amazing what will happen on stage. It's breathtaking when that topic comes up. It doesn't always. We've done the show so many times, sometimes we don't get to it, but I probably should devote time to it every single show, and it's painful and poetic, I'll say that. And John, what Jefferson said, or what you said, is not accurate. The lower populated states are already overrepresented. We were talking about the Electoral College, and this person says that the big states are underrepresented. Currently, I think they are. California, New York, Illinois. Yeah, they're underrepresented. The Electoral College skews towards North and South Dakota. The question is, should it? And plenty of people still think it should, including the president, who likes to hold up red maps with a bunch of states colored in red. But I don't think acreage should determine who's the president is. I think it should be people. And if that means Chicago, LA, and New York, Miami, Houston, they get to determine the president disproportionate to the prairie states, I don't care. Because A, I live in one of those big cities, and B, I'm a Democrat. So there's that. I don't know if I'm a good Democrat, but I voted that way lately. Kevin Powell in the WGN Radio Sports Box, I believe that's his name. I was listening to Rose's show the other day, and I don't remember exactly what it was now.
Just one of those days yesterday.
I shouldn't pick on you or him because I get that stuff. Yeah. I got Laura, let me see if I get her name right now. So I'm bad with names here, okay? I got Lauren Lapka's name wrong the other day, so shut my mouth.
It was nothing personal.
What's the White Sox news?
Big White Sox news today. It appeared Eloy Jimenez, the team's top prospect, was going to start the year in the minors because of the whole service manipulation thing, but looks like the White Sox are going all in on him. A reported 6-year deal for $43 million with a couple of team options, so the Sox could eventually have him under control for about 8 years with... a couple of reports, again, none of this confirmed that it would pay him a little over $70 million. So Eloy Jimenez could be a starter on your White Sox opening day team.
Is he having a good spring?
No, not really.
So it's not predicated on that. They didn't see something this month and go, wow, we have got to lock him in.
They did before they signed him because it gave him an excuse to send him down and say, well, service time, et cetera, et cetera. No.
This then why are they doing this?
I think it just benefits both. I think, look, I think for a few reasons. One, it gives them that extra year of control, that eighth year of control. I think it makes sense for both. I think it shows the how much they value Eloy Jimenez. And look, it doesn't hurt to have some good news following the Machado news, right? I mean, you've got the money to spend. This is a guy who everybody thinks can be all world, can be a multiple all-star type player. And now you've locked him up and he can just start day one. And I think White Sox fans are pretty excited about this.
By the way, a friend of yours, a friend of mine, and a guy who used to work here who now is at VSiN, Sam Panionovich, is on the phone. I called him not to talk about this, but I'll let him talk about this too. Hi, Sam. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm doing well. You know, you can bet on things like this in Vegas. You can bet on how many home runs will Eloy Jimenez hit this year. So the number this morning was 20.5 over-under. So if you think 22, 24, 28, you could bet over. If you think 19, 20, you can bet under. That number has moved up 2 home runs today with that news. The number is now 23.5.
Wait a minute. So if I think he's going to hit less than 24 home runs, I could make some money?
You could, yes, potentially you could. Now, he's a rookie, so there's not going to be a lot of film on him, but at the same time, you're going to have a lot of pitchers, and Kevin knows this because he covers baseball all the time here in Chicago. You're going to have a lot of stubborn, older veteran pitchers say, all right, kid, let's see what you got. So they might actually pitch to the guy, and there's not much protection around him as of right now, so he could hit. I mean, look at Jose Abreu's rookie year. He had about 30 home runs. I want to say like 33, 34 homers. Granted, he was a lot older when he came into the league, but to answer your question, yes, you can bet on this, and the over-under for Eloy Jimenez home run is 23.5.
Hold
over,
on a second.
Over.
Really? You think so? I mean, I'd love that to happen, but here, I want to have my cake and eat it. I'm perpetually disappointed, so I'm going to go, he's not hitting 24 home runs, and if he does, hooray for us. I think I would say less. I would take the under.
Forever the Grinch you are.
I'm forever the realist. Hold on just one second. Kevin, your thoughts?
Over.
Really? You
over.
Think he's going to hit more than 23.5 home runs?
I mean, Chris Bryant had 26 his rookie year and 151 games.
Listen, I'm not a doubter. I'm not even a naysayer. I am a doubter. You think he could be a Chris Bryant type hitter?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
I mean,
seeing him up close and listening to experts who have been, you know, covering the game closely, covering him closely, scouts, things like that. Yeah, I think people think this is an MVP type player.
What about you, Sam Panionovich?
I go over this year. I agree with Paul, but I'd probably go under next year because I think it's always tougher for a player to come up and do it in that second year. Bryce Harper, Mike Trout. Look at Ken Griffey's sophomore year. Usually a lot of these rookies, they come up and they do really well in that first year, but then there's film on them and there's footage on them and people have pitched to these guys before. So I think it's always the best players usually come in with a bang and then they sort of taper off a bit in year two. And it's the great ones that can adjust to the adjustment. So I think he goes over year one. I think he hits about 25, 26 homers. Probably some struggles in his sophomore season next year. But I would probably go over 23.5. Yeah, I think 25 is a good number for Eloy year one.
Sam Panionovich is on a phone. He's a host at VSiN where they watch the wagering in sports. I got my brackets in front of me. Can I bounce a few things off you?
Yeah, who do you got winning it, first of all?
I put the mortgage first round on G. Webb upsetting Virginia.
2 years in a row, huh? You got him losing 2 years in a row.
I made a lot of money on that. Right. I made a lot of money on that last year, my friend.
So if you would have bet $100 last year on Maryland-Baltimore County to beat Virginia, $100 would have made you $2,400. That's how big of a long shot they were last year. And I'm looking at the point spread, Virginia Gardner-Webb. Virginia's a 22-point favorite. So Vegas says if these two teams play 10 times, on average, Virginia would win by 22, 88-66, 77-55. If there's one team that doesn't lose as a one seed this year, if there's one team I think that's a little bit more prepared, a little more on edge, I think it would be Virginia.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only been one number one seed that's ever lost, and it was last year's Virginia Club. If they lose again, I mean, you got to think about firing that coach, man. You can't lose as a one twice in a row in the first round.
Well, it's only happened once, yeah. Okay, so let's do this. The only Big Ten team I have losing in the first round is Ohio State. What do you think of the wisdom of that?
I am not a big Ohio State fan this year. I think that they are very, very young, very immature, and very, very susceptible to being blown out in the first round. I actually have Michigan going. They're going to win the first round matchup. Michigan should beat Montana King. I'm going to go out on a limb.
I know that, but I mean, all the other Big Ten teams advance in the first round, right?
I don't think Iowa is going to beat Cincinnati. Iowa is one of the worst defensive teams I've seen this year. I've got Purdue winning, though, so Lauren's going to be happy about that. Michigan State will win. Michigan will win. Ohio State and Iowa, I've got them both losing.
Ohio State and Iowa. Okay, what about this? I've got all of the 12s winning except Oregon, Wisconsin. I'm advancing three 12s in the first round.
I should bring up Wisconsin, too, because, yes, Wisconsin's in the Big Ten. That is the most popular pick so far in Vegas because Oregon has won 8 games in a row, 4 in the regular season, then they won their conference tournament. And that point spread, when it opened up, Wisconsin was a 3-point favorite against Oregon. You look at the point spread now, yesterday morning, Oregon was favored by 1.5. So that tells you that everybody, like my mailman was like, hey, Sam, I like Oregon. I'm like, yeah, you know, everybody likes Oregon. And if that's the case with these brackets, when you zig, I zag, I think Wisconsin has the ability to make this an ugly basketball game. And Wisconsin should win this game. I think they're the better team, no doubt about it.
Give me another upset. Give me something that people will slap their heads and say, wow, I didn't see that coming.
When Liberty beats Mississippi State, Liberty is the 12 seed in the East region, and they're taking on the 5-seeded Mississippi State. Liberty has a whole lot of upperclassmen. And, King, I know you know this. You always look for good senior guards.
Yes, I do.
You look for good guards that know how to take care of the basketball, and you look for guys that can hit a 3-point shot, and that is Liberty to a T. They are the Flames, by the way, the Liberty Flames, not to be confused with the UIC Flames. But I think Liberty as a 12 is going to win that 12-5 matchup. And another sleeper that I really like, and I followed this team for 3 years now, these guys have gotten a lot better over the last 3 years. And you look for another group that's played together for some years, the Buffalo Bulls are in the West region, which is your bottom left on your bracket. They're currently the 6th seed in the West. They're going to play the winner of Arizona State and St. John's tonight. I think Buffalo is going to win their first game and their second game, and they're going to give Michigan everything they can handle in that Sweet 16 matchup. That'll be the 6th Buffalo against the 2 Michigan. Buffalo, to me, is a really, really strong team, and I think they can make a run for sure.
You're going to see a future NBA player in that game, too, that's for sure. I've got them winning 2 games as well. Okay, then what's your final four, Sam Panayanovich?
So I decided on Michigan State in the East region. I think finally this is the year they get past Duke. They really had some issues over the years getting past Duke. Gonzaga is my champion. I'm bullish on that. I don't care what you say. I'm picking Gonzaga. I know they haven't won before. I'm picking Gonzaga. So they're my final four team out of the West. In the South, it pains me to pick Virginia, but I think that chip on their shoulder has been in the right spot all year. So Michigan State, Gonzaga, Virginia. And how about North Carolina, the number one out of the Midwest? I'm just a big fan of Roy Williams. He always finds a way to get this team peaking in March. Not a sexy Final Four, not a lot of sleepers. Actually, no sleepers in my Final Four. But I go Michigan, Gonzaga, Virginia, and Carolina.
But you don't have Dookie there, do you?
No, I can't stand Duke, King. I can't pick Duke. I can't do it.
Well, now that's you thinking with your heart, man. I mean, I haven't seen many brackets that don't have Duke, at least in the Final Four, for crying out loud.
Do you know how many times I lost my bracket pool to my grandma and my mom? Like, I am so torn in so many different directions. It's like my girlfriend would win the bracket 1 year, then my little brother would win it. I don't think I've ever won. The only time I almost won the bracket was in 05 when I picked Illinois over North Carolina. Unfortunately, North Carolina beat Illinois in the final, and that was the closest I ever got to actually winning it.
This is good information, though. I really appreciate it. So I like your Final Four. Happy to hear you've got Buffalo winning 2. You like the 12 seed. You like Liberty winning a couple of games. That's interesting. And you've got 2 Big Ten teams not advancing. You think Iowa loses in the first round, and you think Ohio State loses in the first round as well.
Yes. Can we make one quick bet real quick? You want to go first? Who's the first number one seed to lose? Who's the first number one to go down? I'll let you go first.
Lapka, you can play in this. Kevin, you can play in this. First one seed to lose. Well, I guess I should go with Duke because everybody thinks Michigan State got jobbed anyway. So if there's a chance, I'm not rooting against Duke. I'm going to say Gonzaga because nobody's seen Gonzaga. I'm not even sure there's a basketball team there. I say Gonzaga is the first one to lose. Kevin, your thoughts? Go.
I was going to go Gonzaga. They lost in their own conference championship, so I'll just go with that one.
Lapka, go.
On my primary bracket, I actually have Gonzaga and Virginia losing out in the same round.
Nice. Yeah. And you, Mr. Panionovich?
I'm going to go Duke loses to Virginia Tech. Duke would be the one. Virginia Tech is four. I got Duke. I couldn't have Duke lose to the 16, but I think they would have a really tough game against Virginia Tech. That'd be a Sweet 16 game in Washington, D.C. And I think Duke is pretty overrated. I love you guys knocking out my champion earlier, though. I love it.
Hosted VSIN, that's Sam Panionovich. Used to work here. We miss you. Thanks, Sam.
All right, guys.
Nice to hear your voice. 253. This is WGN. Rokan, Anna DeVlantis. I see Anna's over there. Hey, Anna.
Hi there, John Williams. We have, you know this Charles Tillman? You remember him, don't you?
Oh, wait. Are you going to talk to him?
We're going to talk to him today, but not at all. Well, we might talk a little football, but he, he's afraid of the water. He doesn't swim, and he's never built anything before, but he's building a boat, and he is going to row across Lake Michigan.
He is afraid of sharks.
Yes.
Even in Lake Michigan.
He visualizes them in any body of water, right?
He doesn't go into swimming pools that he doesn't think about sharks.
Chicago River, right, your swimming pool, anything. Yeah. He thinks there's a shark there, but he's definitely afraid of them, but he's overcoming his fears. So we're going to talk about his what he's doing, some really well for charity, the things he's doing.
I was watching a video about his, what's the name of his charity where they raise money for people's medical bills?
Yeah, it's amazing charity.
He and his wife and their daughter, and their story is a really good one. I'm glad you're telling it.
Cornerstone Foundation.
Cornerstone, that's it. Yep.
Thank you, Kev. So we'll be talking with him. Mike Rogers will be weighing in on the Mueller report. Is it imminent? Is it coming soon? What does he know? Tom Skilling talks about the first supermoon as well. We're going to talk about that in a vernal equinox in nearly 20 years.
How about that?
Have you seen the moon? Have you just looked up last night or anything and take a look at how freaky it kind of looks? It's just how cool it looks.
I did notice it kind of early the other night. I thought it's not even dark out. You know those times where it's like 6 o'clock or 5 and you see the moon?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that had anything to do with this, but good. I'll be listening in for that.
And it's Chicago Henge. We'll explain all about that and much more.
Have a really good show.
Thank you, John.